thought I was taller, Adam. Oh, Mickey. It's so sad.
There you go, baby.
Thank you, darling. I think I'm very, very, very honored to be here and to be a member of this worldwide fellowship of Al-Anon. I have no idea where I would be without my program. Well, in a lunatic asylum, undoubtedly. Or in a prison for a murderess. I don't know. Yeah. I would like to thank Paula Nobly. I would like to thank Sharon. Sharon is so sweet and so Al-Anon. We had a basket the size of Cleveland waiting in our room. It was so amazing. And I would like to thank Sherry, who has done a magnificent job with this Mad Dog Days. Oh! I wasn't sure what that meant, but Charlie got a little frisky in bed last night. Yeah, I rolled over and played dead. So now I'm part of the group. Well, you guys, I don't know where to begin. I have a mother and dad who had a mother and dad who were not alcoholics. I did not grow up in that, you know, kind of a background. I grew up with a lot of shame because my father, God bless him, was head of the numbers racket in Western Pennsylvania. And when people asked me what he did, I said he was a numerologist. It was actually the lottery, but in those days it was illegal. He was the nicest, sweetest, dearest man who was a drinker, but not an alcoholic. You know, there is such a thing. I had a mother who I don't think ever had a drink, who was this sweet person. How did I get so screwed up? But I did. It was never good enough. I don't know, maybe being short had something to do with it. Yeah. Putting your makeup on and a belt buckle. I met the love of my life when I was young, and he never had a drink, ever, never had a drink. And I married him, and we had the first 8 years, and a child in those first 8 years, of fabulous laughter and wonderful life, love. And then he discovered a thing called pot. Oy. And then he discovered PSC, PLP, PRS, I don't know. I used to say he was on everything except NBC. And then he started to change. No drinking. We're married 8 years, no drinking, but a lot of pills and pot and craziness and personality change. And then, in the next 5 years, we were performing on a cruise. I know in Al-Anon you're not supposed to say what you do for a living, at least where I go. My home group is the Lunch Bunch in North Hollywood. You guys know that one? Well, come there when you can. Hoping that I don't have the food commitment that day, because I'm not very good at it. So there he was. We went on this cruise and we performed. I can't say what what we did for a living. I can't tell the story. Okay, we were insurance salespeople, and we were performing on a ship. And my husband was smoking pot on the ship. People would go by the cabin and go, whoa. And then he discovered booze. It was a 10-day cruise, and at the end of the 10th day, he was, what I found out later, was an alcoholic. And then the dance began. because that wonderful mother I told you about that I had said to me, you know, Mitzi, the right woman can make or break a man. And so started the insanity. If you really love me, I'm going to go and find somebody else. Well, I'm short. Where were they going to find me, you know? I did everything in my power. And when he would drive off, I know that my neighbors thought I was a hood ornament. I would throw myself on the roof of his car like this. And I just didn't have my Charlie anymore. And people had told me that I should go to Al-Anon. And I said, what? Will you go to a meeting? And I have to go to a meeting? He's the one who's drinking, not me. No, but you should go because then you'll find out more about what's going on. No, I'm going to get... See, you don't understand. I'm very strong, very strong, and I'm going to get him to stop drinking. You are? You did? No. And as his disease got worse, my disease got worser. Oh, my God, my dear, some of us are sicker than others. I was so sick. You can't imagine it. And yet, there was something inside of me, I swear, where I still loved the guy. I loved him because I had had, in essence, 13 years of a guy who never drank. I mean, the pot and those pills made him a little crazy, but the booze made him totally another person. And I didn't know what to do. I tried everything. And one day, a miracle occurred in my life. I had threatened about 900 times to leave him, and I never could. And somebody once said to me, wait a second. I called a place called Central Office, and they said, is he attractive? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, you know that if you leave him, he'll meet somebody else. I don't know if you understand that I'm insecure. I'm telling you now, please, we're brothers and sisters in this room. I am. I never think I'm good enough. I never think I'm smart enough, cute enough, funny enough, anything enough. And Charlie was the cutie. I don't want to hear one person after this meeting say, oh, you're right, he is so cute. He knows it. Oh, God. So the miracle that occurred was after all these threats and all this hood ornament stuff and all this begging and pleading, and I have no pride. Don't go. Please, I love you. God. I was so needy. It's sad, you guys. But it's funny, too, in a way. Okay, and my kid is growing up, and she used to call me and say, you know, Daddy picked me up from school, and he pushed a boy. His arm went in the car, and Daddy pushed him. By this time, I had to change my career. I couldn't be his partner anymore because he would go out on stage, and he would not know where he was. Okay? So I went, I don't know what to do because we had no money. I mean, we lived from hand to mouth, you know? And we got a little bit lucky on a couple of game shows. If you're trying to figure out, where do I know them from? Tattletales was one of the shows that we were regulars on and Match Game and stuff like that. So it was, I don't know if you can understand what I'm saying here, but because it's so humiliating to have people recognize you, and then you introduce your husband, and he's not there. He's just not there. So I had to change careers. I had to find something to do to put the family together, and I was lucky enough, because the timing was correct, to be a writer. And I was so lucky, and a God that I certainly... By the way, did I mention I'm a Jew and went to Catholic school? It's not good. I'm not going to lie to you. And I wanted to be like everybody. I wanted to be a Catholic. I wanted to. I mean, it was so beautiful. And then on Saturday, I went to Sunday school. What? Saturday, which is the Jewish Sabbath, I went to Sunday school. And then the rabbi of the Sunday school that was on Saturday heard me saying the Hail Mary to a group of Jewish people, Jewish kids. And he expelled me. So this was my spiritual identification. The reason my parents sent me to Catholic school was because I was a disciplinary problem. And they figured, those nuns will get her. They'll get her. With their habits, you know. Oh, God. So, back. Are you following this thing? Because I know I'm jumping from dee, 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 dee. But, you know, you'll get to love me in a special way. Okay, so now, after all this stuff I went through and praying to a God that I did not know existed, how could I? Was it a Catholic thing? Did they wear a halo? Were there angels? Or was it a Jewish God who threw his babies in the fire? No, I don't want that one. So, I came home one day and from this job that I had to learn how to do called writing. And something said, this is it. I'm not doing this anymore. I don't care. And I called the AA office and I said, can you take someone into recovery? I didn't think I said recovery. Even if they don't want to go. And he said, you know, you should call Al-Anon. Again with that Al-Anon. And when I came home from work that day, I said, you know what? I found out that I can have you committed. And so... I mean it this time. And you know, I think men, God bless men, I love men, are psychic. I think they know when we're not cucking around anymore, when we're not fooling, when we really mean it. And he said, okay, I'll go. And I went, no, I really mean it. This, you'll what? I'll go. So I called our doctor. He was put into rehab. And then the real dance started. Because he started to go to a thing called meetings. And people started to call him. And people started to take him. And out of the corner of my eye, I would see, and I'm not kidding, I would see him like on his knees praying. And because I've already told you that I'm so competitive, I went, he's going to get ahead of me, and he's going to, like, he stopped drinking, and he goes to these meetings, and maybe there's girls there. Although I doubt it. I mean, Gary, who is his sponsor, may his soul rest in peace. I love you, Gary. Wouldn't take him to a meeting where there were girls, would he? So, of course, I went to meetings with him. What else would I do? You gotta keep an eye on him. Oh, God. It's so sad. And I went to his meetings, and there wasn't a meeting that I went to of Alcoholics Anonymous that I didn't cry my eyes out. I had so much sadness, obviously, to get out. And then something happened that is really embarrassing to tell you. I got jealous, insanely jealous. That he was getting up above me, and I was going to be left in the dust. And so I called his sponsor. And I said, what am I going to do? This is terrible. I know I should be so happy. And so, I don't know, what's the word? Grateful? No. Maybe that's the word. That he stopped drinking. He doesn't drink or smoke those funny cigarettes. And he said, Gary, you need your own program. Again with the program. And so, 2 years after my husband was sober, because I waited for the other shoe to drop. I mean, he made promises all the time that he would stop. And he couldn't. He couldn't. I walked into the rooms of Al-Anon. And I met the most amazing people that I have ever met. Women who are my dearest friends. I hated it when I went. I was kicking and screaming. All I ever did, if I shared, was talk about him. And I never heard them say, I mean, that's because I was so arrogant, I wasn't listening, that this program is for you. God, it got into my thick head. Duh. Very late. Very late. But you know what? It takes what it takes. And I found out that it wasn't a sin to love an alcoholic, that it was okay, and that this sweet man, who I loved and didn't leave, and now I know why I didn't leave, because he had a disease that could be arrested but not cured, and that the only hope for recovery would be his willingness to not drink. So that was his program. And my program was to mind my own business, clean up my side of the street, and here was a corker, take responsibility. What? Yeah. Yeah, what's your part in it? You're needy, you're pathetic, and don't beat yourself up. Okay, I won't. And you're a very strong lady, and you didn't just sit around and wait for the miracle for him. You needed to have a miracle, my dear. And you needed to feel proud and feel confident that you're a woman of substance. And take a little hug for yourself, my dear. Take a commitment. Reach out for other people. All of this stuff, you guys, I knew nothing about. Take responsibility. Reach out for other people. Take a commitment. What are you, crazy? This is all about me. No, it's not. No, it's not. Before I spoke today, I was on my knees begging God, and I swear, not to be disrespectful, but I know God for the past few weeks has been saying, it's you again. All right, I know you're speaking at a meeting. Shut up. Just be real. Just be honest. Stop annoying me. But this thing about God, let me tell you how that happened. Someone, Lucy, I don't know if anybody knows Lucy from Al-Anon, over on the other side of the hill, used to say to me, Mitzi, you need to have a God box. And you write down, you know, what you feel and what you can humbly ask God for. And I said, okay, and I did. And about 6 months to a year after doing that, I went through that God box, and 90% of everything, my sweet, loving God made it happen because I was willing. And that comes before you jump into anything, to be willing. I was willing to get better. I was willing not to be the victim. I was willing to understand that my poor darling husband, who, by the way, I tried to kill. I forgot to tell you that. No, I did. I did. One night when he was in a blackout, I took a pillow and I put it over his face.
What?
Yes. Stop it. No, you know. Don't. I don't want to hear that. I made amends. But you know what I'm saying? This is how crazy we can get from this disease. We have a disease. I acknowledge that we have a disease, okay? And that's when I kind of said, okay, I'll go to those meetings. Maybe I am sick. Maybe. I mean, can you imagine that I would have been coming to you from Sing Sing or wherever, Shawshank. Oh, my God. So, you guys, here I am. I gave him a 20-year cake, and my tears just about put out all the candles. I am so proud of my husband, Charlie. We're going to be celebrating 47 years of marriage. 48, I'm sorry. Yeah, well, miracle of miracles. Anyhow, I'm going to go. How much time have I done? 20 minutes, probably. What did I do?
You did 3 minutes. You have a lot more to go.
You kids, if you, and that little girl, by the way, grew up drug-free, funny. She's a yoga teacher. I used to say, please, God, just let her find, God bless you, sweetie. God bless. Let her find her passion. And she did. Yoga, she loves it. She's good at it. She won't teach me because she's a little bit of a Nazi. I can't. Mother, you're not doing it right. Down dog, feet do things. I still go to meetings. I would have no quality to my life, or not as much quality, which I do now. By the way, I have one more thing to tell you. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so discombobulated, but I know you understand. I know you do. I'm shallow. I'm very, very shallow. And, you know, because of what my daddy did, we always had a lot of money and everything. During the time of Charlie's disease, we went bankrupt. And I had to learn a whole new way of life. I had to pull in, my dad used to say, pull in my horns. I don't know what that meant, horns. I don't, maybe because he was Jewish and they have horns. No, I'm just kidding. I had to learn to be humble and to rebuild and to not be ashamed. And not be so flippant, and to respect money. And I have. And I just got a little car called a Mini Cooper, you know. I like big cars. Thank you, sweetheart. And the guy said to us, I swear, you have a very good credit rating. And aren't I lucky? Aren't I blessed? And don't I thank my God above, my higher power, for all the blessings that he has given me? My friends, my daughter, my husband, you guys, the fact that I could stand here and almost see you. So thank you for listening. I hope you got something out of it. And if you didn't, you may get it from him. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mitzi.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you. Feel how cold my hands are.
It's a little chilly in here. Thank you, Mitzi. Let's give her a nice big hand again. Like my husband would say, here's the other half. Charlie B.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Dixie. Mitzi. Thank you. My name is Charlie. I'm an alcoholic. Very, very happy to be here. And it's okay, I have that problem at home. Very happy to be in paradise one more time. You put a pillow over my face and try to strangle me?
Smother.
Smother with a pillow. I dreamt I was eating marshmallows. Well, that might have something to do with it. First, let me address all the Al-Anons out there. This is not a cop-out, but I got to tell you the truth. Alcoholics, like myself, I'll use myself as an example. I did not wake up one day and say, let me ruin all the lives around me. What I'm going to do now, and I choose to do this, is I'm going to fall over in wedding cakes. I'm going to throw up in every party that I ever go to. I'm going to smoke enough weed for Count Basie's band for the rest of their lives. And I'm going to ruin lives like a wake of a ship. I'm going to ruin lives. I'm not going to be on time anywhere. I'm not going to be a good father to my kid. I'm going to be the worst husband in the world. And I want to be in jail. And I want to be in those loony bins where they give you those cute little things to wear backwards. I and alcoholics, we did not wake up and say this. We did not choose alcoholism. We didn't choose to be the kind of people we wound up being. I was down to 111 pounds. I looked like a Jewish dart. Let me pick up the story when Mitzi drove me to the hospital. Mitzi drove me to the hospital because I said, I can't take this anymore. I've had enough of this. Because when Mitzi came home that day through the door, I didn't know who she was. I didn't know who I was. I had a wet brain. I didn't understand anything. I was gone. I was off to the races. I was a helpless, hopeless guy. And Mitzi drove me to the hospital. And during the drive to the hospital, I said to her, you know, maybe this is not such a good idea. I mean, a hospital, that's a very drastic thing. I don't know if I want to go to a hospital. I've never been in a hospital in my life. What am I running to a hospital for? And she said, you're going. But what she didn't know is when I heard I was being driven to the hospital, I went into my closet and smoked every roach that I ever had hidden. And I drank every little tiny airplane-sized vodka that I had in every pair of clothing that I had hidden because I wasn't sure they were going to have that vodka at the hospital. So I wanted to make sure that I went in with a good feeling. And I remember her dropping me off and taking me to a lady who took information down and then put a cute little plastic bracelet around here. And then Mitzi left. And the lady, it was a nurse, said to me, you're very lucky you got a private room. Your roommate just left. And you're very lucky. Now, I want you to go in here, change your clothes, and go to sleep. And we'll start detoxing you, and you'll start understanding stuff in the morning. Now, she left the room. I'm alone. I'm alone in a dark hospital room. And Mitzi left, and I was alone, and I don't do well or good alone. I'm I'm very dependent on Mitzi. Not dependent, but I mean, I'd rather be with her than without her. And I was alone, and I started to feel sorry for myself. And I looked up to a God that I never believed in, because the God I was raised on was the God I used to call the God of smite. Smote. This God smote everything. He didn't like the way the world was going, so he flooded it. Everybody was gone. He took a bunch of people up a hill and said, run down the hill, but don't look back. And a lady named Ruth looked back. She was a salt lick. I didn't like that God. But I looked up to God, and I said, I'll make a deal with you. Because I was sure God wanted to make a deal with a 111-pound Jew loser. God waits for those moments. And I said, if you get me out of here, I will not drink again, and I will not smoke dope, and I will not use. And then I started to cry because I thought, what the hell am I doing here? I had a great career. Mitzi and I used to have a lot of fun. I used to raise my kid, and then she wouldn't look at me anymore. My whole life is down the tubes. What am I doing here? What happened? And I cried myself, not to, even to sleep. I just kept crying all through the night. I couldn't go to sleep. I didn't have my kit of tools to go to sleep. I didn't have a quart of vodka to go to sleep. And the next day, the nurse opens the door and says, we don't usually do this, but we got a telephone call for you, and it's an emergency. So you best take it in the doctor's office. So I put my slippers on, and I shuffle down the hall in this paper robe with my ass hanging out the back. Believe me, I was not a vision for you. I wasn't a vision for anybody. And I pick up the phone, and it's the agent, my agent, Eleanor. And I go, hello, and she said, what are you doing there? My God, Mitzi told me you were in there for a rest. Why? And I said, well, because I needed some rest. And she said, from what? I never book you anywhere. You're unemployable. And I said, well, I'm just here for a rest. I'm kind of drying out, I guess, Eleanor. And she said, well, something came through for you that I've been working on for a half a year. They want you to do the guest star role in the final episode of a show called Hill Street Blues. And I said, wow. And she said, I didn't tell you about it because if it fell through, you'd be drinking. She didn't know that if it came to pass, I would be drinking also. I drank on Arbor Day. It was a very big day for me to drink. And she said, now, they need you down at the studio. They need you in wardrobe. Can you be there? And I said, yes, I'll be there in a second. And I said, listen, Mitzi may not like the fact that I'm getting out in 8 hours after I came in. So why don't you come pick me up? And she said, okay. Hung the phone down. Dr. Gershman, who was the head of the recovery department at Cedars-Sinai Hospital, said to me, you know, I overhear you, and I don't think it's a good idea for you to leave. And I said, sure, because you're jealous. You want to be on Hill Street Blues. My alcoholic brain started right away. And I said, yeah, I'm going. And he said, would you promise to come back here every night? And I went, oh, sure, that's my main promise. Yeah. Oh, sure, that's what I want to do. Sure. Do a television show and then come back in my paper robe. Yeah, that's what I want to do. I'll be there every night. Yeah. So Eleanor drives me home and the script comes. Now, remember, I hadn't started to detox yet. I had not detoxed yet. And I didn't have a drink. I didn't come home and have a drink. So I read the script, and it looked, from what I understood of it, it looked excellent, something I've been looking forward to my whole life on one of my favorite shows. And then the wardrobe department called me, and I gave them my sizes. And 3 days later, I went down to shoot Hill Street Blues, the final episode, at CBS Radford. CBS Radford. And I walked into the studio. They showed me my dressing room, and I got dressed. And I walked out onto the stage and the set, and there were hundreds of reporters from every country in the world there that day because this was the final episode of a very, very, very big hit show. And they were overwhelming. I never saw so many reporters in my life. And it was time to do my scene. And I had a scene with the star of the show, Daniel J. And Daniel said, do you mind if we shoot you real quick without a rehearsal? Because this is a very tense feeling for all of us. This is the first shot of the last show of this show. And we've been together 11 years. Do you mind if we don't rehearse and we just put it on film? And I said, well, sure. Absolutely. Remember, I hadn't started to detox yet. Okay, they stand me on a spot. Camera's on me. Clapper girl comes and goes, scene 32, take one, action. Now, Daniel J. says something to me, and I don't know what the hell he's talking about. It certainly didn't make sense to me, but he stopped talking and everybody was looking at me, including the reporters, so I knew it was my turn to say something. And I had no idea what to say. And I hear, cut! Then Herb, the director, comes and says, is there a problem? And because I'm so full of it and I could lie like that, I said, yes, there's a problem. That reporter over there took a picture of me. The flash went off and my mind blew. And Herb, the director, said, anybody takes a picture of anybody will be thrown off the set. Well, let me tell you, that man didn't even have a camera. But I can come up with him, boy. Can I come up with him? So the clapper girl comes back again and goes, scene 32, take two. All right, action. Now Daniel is talking to me in Swedish. Because that's what it sounded to me. And I gave him the perfect imitation of the RCA Victor dog. And I hear, cut. Now Daniel J. and Herb, the director, come over to me and go, what's the problem? And I said, I'll tell you what the problem is. All right, you talked about how emotional this scene was, how emotional this is the last episode of a show you've been doing for so many years. Well, how do you think I feel? I'm a little emotional. I got some emotion myself. So they said, okay. And the makeup lady is wiping me off with tissue, and guess what? I'm starting to detox. And the sweat is coming out of me. And as she's wiping me down with tissues, the tissues are sticking to my face. And they're applying new makeup because I've sweated all over myself. They give me a new shirt. And right there on the set. And they said, are you ready now? And I said, just give me a moment. And I turned around and I said, dear God, help me to remember what I'm supposed to remember and what the hell I'm doing here. Because I looked around and it was a police station and I thought I was busted again by the Van Nuys police. I'd been busted twice before and the same thing, the alphabet. Try to say when you're loaded. Impossible. Went to jail twice. And I look around and I'm in the jail set here and I think, am I busted again? And, okay, you ready? Yes, I'm ready. Scene 32, take four. Bing. Daniel talks. And I realize I'm dead. I'm dead in the water. I never really went to high school or public school because I was always an actor and I always knew how to act and that got me out of a lot of stuff. And that was the only thing I knew how to do. I can't add a column of figures. I'm not good with anything else. And I realize it's over for me. It's all over. And I screamed loud on the set. Oh, no. And I ran to my dressing room because I knew in my brain I was finally going to go over Laurel Canyon. I always wondered what it would be like for the car to go flying over a canyon, because I'm not any use to anybody. My kid hates me. My wife doesn't get along. We don't even look at each other anymore. And screw it. I'm going to go over Laurel Canyon. That's a purpose. And I was crying, and the sweat was dripping from me. I was in the middle of detoxing. My hand is shaking because I need a drink so badly. And I couldn't even unbutton my shirt to get out of my clothes, my costume. And I ripped it, and I hear on the dressing room door. And I go, no, 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 no. Nobody comes in here. And the door opened, and it was Daniel J. Travanti, the star of the show, who says to me, Charlie, do you have a problem with alcohol or drugs? And the whole thing came out of my mouth. Oh, Daniel, you don't understand. I mean, 3 days ago, I was in rehab, and I got out of rehab, and I haven't, and right now I'm shaking, and the sweat is coming out of me, and I left too soon, and I shouldn't have left, and my eyes are closed, and I'm crying, and I feel his arms around me. And he sits me over on the couch, and he kneels down and looks up at me and says, listen to me. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am now making you an honorary member. And guess what? I'm your sponsor. I didn't even know what that meant. And he said, let me call Herb, the director, in here, because I want him to know. I said, no, 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 I don't want him to know what's going on. No, please, nobody. And he said, listen to me, you schmuck. This is Herb's first directing job out of the Betty Ford Clinic. This is his first week directing sober. You were sent here. I said, oh, okay. He said, let me get Herb. Come in here. And I was sitting and I was crying and the sweat was dropping from me and I had tissue all over my face and... In came the makeup girl, the dialogue coach, the wardrobe lady, about 16 of the crew, and Herb, and we had a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous right in the dressing room. I don't know what the hell they said, but I was at a meeting. Somebody's arms were around me. Somebody took my hand. Somebody said, you're home. You'll never have to go out again. And then Daniel says to me, now, we're ready to go out there and do your job. And I went, are you kidding? What are you, nuts? I'm not ready to do the job. I don't remember anything. I don't know. He says, listen to me. You're getting paid to do work here. You go out and you work. As your sponsor, I'm suggesting this to you. And as he's suggesting, I notice my arm has gone up here. I go out on the stage, and the reporters now are whispering amongst each other. I don't know. Was it a religious breakdown? Well, I don't know. Is he gay? Is he coming out of the closet? What is he crying about? What? And Herb, the director, said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to have to clear the set because Charlie has a problem. And you won't know what the problem is because if you print anything, we will sue because you don't know what the problem is. And we're not about to tell you, but we'd like to continue work without anybody here. So they sent everybody out except the crew. And the script lady would come to me and show me a sentence. She would block everything else out. And I would say that sentence the best way I could. Sometimes wrong, sometimes right. Then she would go back and sit down, and the camera would be on me, action, and I would say that sentence. Just one sentence at a time. And all the crew worked with me, the director, Daniel J., until I finished the show. By the way, don't rent it. It's the worst piece of crap you'll ever see in your life. Please, I'm begging you not to... I look like Jewish jello. After the show, Daniel takes me outside of the stage, outside into the street, and he points up Radford Street, and he said, see, up there, the last house on the block, that's the oldest AA clubhouse in the San Fernando Valley. I want to see you there for meetings. I want to see you there every day for a noon meeting and every night for an 8:30 p.m. meeting. And I'll look in once in a while. And if you're not there, as your sponsor, I will track you down and beat the crap out of you. Okay, I was too scared not to. So I went, and I got a sponsor, and I listened. I kept my mouth shut for a year. I listened, and I started to work the steps with my sponsor. And then God interfered, and God didn't interfere. He came down into my life, and I was fortunate enough to get a TV series that we shot in San Diego that ran for 8 years. And on that set, I kept my big book on my chair in case anybody wanted to talk to me. And up in down in San Diego, there came 6 or 7 Charlie Brills. I could see in the actor's eyes. I could see detox going on. I could see the need for a drink going on. I could see when you're doing a scene with somebody and they take a taxi, they're like, taxi, and they're not in the same room as you. I could see that. So I took people to meetings, and I don't know if they stayed sober, but I stayed sober. And as Mitzi told you, yesterday I had 20 years and 6 months. One day at a time. So when people ask me to come down to wherever we are, is this Cathedral City? Yes. Yes, Cathedral City. When people ask me to come to Cathedral City, I say gladly. Now let me tell you one quick story before I go. So I mean, you know, when I, what, Mitzi?
You sure mentioned how good Doug was last night.
Al-Anon. There's your example right there of Al-Anon. Be sure to mention how great Doug was last night. Doug, you were great last night. Okay, one quick story and then I'm going. I now have 3 months sobriety. And my agent calls and I have a job in a film in India. India. And I said, great. And my sponsor said, I don't think that's a good idea. You've only got 3 months. And I said, again, I said, bullshit. It's because you're jealous. You want to go to India. So he took me down to the central office and he got me a book. And it had every meeting in every city that I was going to be in India. 2 cities, Bangalore and Madras. And he said, you get there and you make these calls and you go to meetings there. I said, okay, because I had 3 months. I knew about this program. So I got on the plane, and I was sad because I was leaving Mitzi, and I had never left her for that amount of time. And I got on the plane, and I had a whole stretch of seats there, and I stretched out, and I went to sleep. And every once in a while, I'd be awakened by the tinkling of the little glasses coming down the aisle. But I said, no, 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 no. And whenever I got bored, I read my big book and put me to sleep. And we land in India, and I get out, and the driver drove me to the hotel. But in the streets, I saw families living there, living in the streets. I had never seen anything like that. Poverty is a step up from what I saw. But the most wonderful spiritual people I've ever met in my life, Indians. And I get to my hotel room, and I'm too jazzed up to go to sleep. So I say, I just throw the suitcases there. Here you go. And I'm going to walk out in the street now because I'm playing an Indian in this film, and I want to see how they shake their heads and what they do and how they walk and how they talk. So I went out into the street. It was 300 degrees. And I walked around, and I looked at Indians, and I listened, and I walk around the corner of my hotel, and there is a hospital with a group of nuns selling artifacts that they've made to have money for the hospital. And I walk smack into the Serenity Prayer sewn in English, put on a doily. And I ran up to the nurse behind there, and I went, oh, my God, you don't understand. This is a God shot. This is what told me. I got 3 months. It's a God shot. Listen, I came all the way from Los Angeles, and there's the Serenity Prayer. And what I want is I'm looking for some pretty good meetings around here. You know, pretty good meetings. I got the book, but I called people in the book before I left, and half those meetings don't even exist anymore. And I need meetings, and she gives me the impression of the RCA Victor Doug. So I figured if I talk louder, she'll hear me better. Great American tourist. Listen, my name is Charlie, AA, and I'm looking for some, you know, AA. No. She spoke Hindi. So she shoves a piece of paper and a pencil next to me, and I shoved it, I wrote AA, and I gave it to her, and she shoved it back to me, and I thought, I don't know. I pointed to the hotel. It was a huge hotel, and I wrote 909, my room. And I figured, you know, okay, I got my big book. I'll do this alone. I don't need, you know, oh, it's okay. I'll get through this. And I walk around India for a while. I walk around Bangalore, and then I get tired, and I go to my hotel room. And I crash in my clothes with the suitcases on the bed because I've been up a long time and somewhere I'd lost a day. I went over some international stuff. And I was a day older. So I went to sleep and I slept long and hard, long. And the next morning at 7:30 in the morning on my hotel room, I opened it up. Six Indians came piling into my hotel room for a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we had a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Hindi. They gave me their book. I gave them my book. I didn't know what they were saying, but I knew what they were talking about. And the next morning, another knock, nine Indians. Then 11 Indians, and then 15 Indians, and then the women came, which was a big, big thing for them. They admitted that they were alcoholic, and they came up to have a meeting with the men. And the meeting got so big that I had to have it in the lobby of the hotel. You can't escape AA if you want it. You can't escape recovery if you want it. You'll find it in the jungles of India if you want it. And that meeting, 1987, still goes on every other morning at 7:30 in the lobby of that hotel. I'm so blessed. I'm blessed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm blessed to be married to a lady who's an Al-Anon, because those two programs saved my life. Thanks.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.